A daily book reviewer, in the course of his occupation, reads at least 3 books a week for 11 months. Thus, over a period of 8 or 9 years, he will have read about 1,200 books, which is the same number that Rex Stout had read by the time he was 10 years old. The rest of his career has been quite as prodigious as this beginning promised. Wanting to acquire capital so that he could devote himself to full-time writing, Mr. Stout invented and put into effect a school banking system, which was installed in 400 cities and towns in this country. As an author, Mr. Stout has had 53 books published in 36 years. Most of these have featured a private detective named Nero Wolfe and his young assistant, Archie Goodwin, who, with their first appearance in 1934 in a novel called Fer de Lance, assumed immediately the reality of that other famous pair, Holmes and Watson. The difference is that those lodgings on Baker Street are no longer occupied. But you'd find it hard to convince any Rex Stout reader that there is not a real Nero Wolfe today in a real brownstone on a real West 35th Street. And after this latest novel, the doorbell rang, you'd find it hard to convince the FBI, too. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if out there among you at this moment, Archie Goodwin might be taking notes. Not Nero Wolfe. He doesn't get around much. Wolfe's characteristics and hobbies are well known, his general immobility in body, not in mind, his gourmet tastes, his beer drinking, his orchid growing. I'd like to say a word, this being the kind of occasion it is, about his reading. Now, Nero Wolfe is not the only private detective in fiction who reads books. There must be at least 4 or 5 others. But Nero Wolfe reads books by living authors, which means authors who are trying to make a living. In the course of a case, he may have time to read 3 or 4 of these, and the titles and authors are mentioned in the descriptions of his cases. This is another instance of the support and encouragement given to America's working writers by Nero Wolfe's creator, my president, the president of the Authors League of America, Mr. Rex Stout.
Mr. Dalby, all you handsome people. You know, if you don't mind, I'm going to regard you as the Committee on Grievances, because I have a beef. Thirty-seven years ago, I decided to quit that monkey business of trying to pile up some money and write some stories. So in the next 5 years, I wrote 5 of them. And it was all right. I got a letter from Bertrand Russell, who wasn't yet a lord, and from some woman in France named Odette Caen, whom I later found out was the current friend of H.G. Wells, and he got mad about it. And a lot of little nice things like that happened, but it wasn't going too hot, because I realized that if I went on trying to make serious comments about human character and human problems, I would never turn out to be a Dostoevsky or a Balzac, so to hell with it, I quit. And I decided just to write stories and to try to make them as good stories as I could. And the very first one I wrote happened to have in it a couple of characters named Nero Wolfe and Archie Goodwin, who were private detectives. And I liked what people said about the book and about them, so I decided to go on trying my best to write good stories. And I went on. And it was all right. I mean, some copies got sold, even in hardcovers. And I got a few nice letters and pretty good reviews. Of course, we all know what book reviewers are. I was never really disgruntled or unhappy about it. It is probably true of writers just as is of nearly anybody else, that one of the conditions, maybe the condition that they would like most to reach, is a situation where when he or she enters Grand Central Station or a theater lobby or almost any public place, they can overhear somebody muttering to somebody else, "That's him," or even, "That's he." Well, it went along pretty well. I wrote what I thought not were great stories, but pretty good ones. And they sold pretty well in hardcovers, and they all came out in different editions of paperbacks, and they got translated into 22 different foreign languages, including Sinhalese, which is one of my many distinctions, that I wrote the only mystery story that's ever been translated into Sinhalese, which is the language spoken and written on Ceylon. In that one respect, at least, I have it all over Agatha Christie and Earl Stanley Gardner. But I was never annoyed by hearing too many people muttering, "That's him." Well, then what happened? What happened was that I decided to write another story, as I do each year. And as always, it was the two central characters were to be Nero Wolfe and Archie Goodwin. And it was to be a story in which they would come in conflict with the officers of the law. But I had got not fed up with, but just a little bit off of, the New York Homicide Squad and the District Attorney of Westchester County and other former antagonists, opponents of Nero Wolfe and Archie Goodwin. I decided to use a new one. Well, who could it be? It could be the CIA, it could be, and I decided, why not? It would be the FBI and a man named J. Edgar Hoover. Well, that was all that was in my mind. I just thought it would be fun to use them for the opponents in a story instead of Inspector Kramer or no matter who. So I went ahead and wrote the story, and all I had in mind while I was writing the story was to try to make it, as I always have, as good a story as I could. Well, it got into galleys. And the first thing that happened was that I got a telephone call from a man named, one of the first things, a man named Caskey Stinnett. And he said that Clay Felker had suggested to him the idea of possibly writing a piece about me and my new book, which was to be published in about a month. That had never happened before. And I thought, by gosh, at last I've written such a good story that somebody wants to write something about it even before it's published. Anyway, Mr. Stinnett came up to Brewster and we talked for a couple of hours. And not long after that, the piece that he wrote appeared in the magazine of the Herald Tribune. And then letters began to come. This is even before the book was out, or very shortly after. And then letters began to come. A kind of letters I had never got before. I had got a lot of letters before, as every story writer does, about telling me, asking me, please, to tell this 82-year-old woman in Seattle, Washington, with the shingles, please to tell her whether Nero Wolf used a tub or a shower. That kind of research. But when this piece came out, I began to get an entirely different kind of letter. For instance, I got a letter from a newspaper man in New Jersey of three paragraphs. And the first paragraph said, "Dear Mr. Stout, I have just read the piece about you and your book by Caskey Stinnett in the Herald Tribune. Paragraph. Thomas Jefferson thanks you. Thomas Paine thanks you. James Madison thanks you. Paragraph. And I thank you." Well, I had a notion, of course, obviously, of writing him and asking what was wrong with Benjamin Franklin and George Washington. But, and here I'm coming to my grievance. That was the first instance of a kind of reaction that I'd never had before after all of these years of writing stories. During the following 2 or 3 months, and it's still going on, I was asked to go on television programs and radio programs and to grant interviews. It's wonderful to be asked to grant an interview. To a newspaper man or woman from Toronto or London or no matter where. And I don't think it's fair. If it had come to a point where I wrote so good a story that people could no longer just now and then buy a copy and have reviews written about the book and so on as a story, well, that would have been wonderful. But no, there was really some fur flying. There was really a lot of dust kicked up. And why? Because I'd written an unusually good story? No, because I'd had the nerve to poke J. Edgar Hoover in the nose. I don't think I would mind that at all if when I had originally started to write the book, I had done so with the idea of exposing or showing up or fighting the FBI and Mr. Hoover. But that wasn't my idea at all. I just wanted to write a good story. But it's no longer like that. It now has come to the point where obviously in the minds and perhaps even breasts of 9,412 American citizens, my fellow citizens, I am regarded as the guy who is going to abolish the FBI and Mr. Hoover. Well, I really don't care for that job. It's true that I'm glad I took a little lick. It's true that I think that J. Edgar Hoover is one of the most objectionable people in our country today. It's true that it's too bad that we do not have a national federal bureau of investigation that really operates competently on a professional level. And it's too bad that the great egocentrism of one man is what has prevented us from having that. And if I have helped a little bit to get some competent cop, like a Vincent Broderick, like a Francis Adams, a good cop in charge of our Federal Bureau of Investigation, instead of that bird, I would enjoy having done that very much. And indeed, while it's true that I've told you that I'm making a grievance and I wanted you to be the grievance committee, I admit that that was not a completely honest and candid statement. Maybe that's what I ought to do instead of trying to write good stories. Maybe I ought to be a professional crusader Maybe I ought to take out after organizations and not pay much attention really to whether they're doing more harm than good or more good than harm, but just go after them on general principles. Maybe next time I'm going to start day after tomorrow writing another story. And maybe this time I ought to take out after the Salvation Army. Or the Roman Catholic hierarchy. Or the Boy Scouts. Or the John Birch Society. Or the Ku Klux Klan. Or the Women's Christian Temperance Union. I'll think it over and decide what to do about it. Thank you.
Okay, you can stop taking notes. The evidence is in.